Okay, hello everyone. We are gathered here for the 153rd session of Mindfulness for Beginners today in English medium. And today is 12th October 2024. So I'd like to warmly welcome Venerable Homagama Dhamma Kusala Thero all the way from Nisarnawane and everyone who's joined here today for the session. On Zoom and also via Facebook Live. So our program is simple. We, like every other program, we usually practice mindfulness. So in this program also, we have dedicated some time for the practice of mindfulness. And after that, after the practice session, we have our Swami Nansi will give us a talk about today's topic, which will be followed up by a Q&A session, and the reports that you have submitted will also be read during this session. And you will also get an opportunity to ask questions from Venerable Bhante. So, without delaying the question any further, I'd like to invite Venerable Bhante to teach us mindfulness to start the practical session. So, I'm not...
Thanks, Arindu. Hello, everyone. Today, I thought we can do a walking session to start today's program. I think most of you are familiar about mindful walking. But if you are new here, I'll give you some guidance so you can join the walking session along with others. For this, we need some space, probably like 10-15 feet, that type of a space where you can walk comfortably. Once you have selected that space, walk in a comfortable manner. And what we are trying to do is we try to be mindful of our walking. Usually when we walk, our attention is somewhere in thoughts, maybe thinking about something. That way our attention is lost somewhere. But when we do mindful walking, we try to be with the walking process. Notice the walking body and try to maintain your attention with that. And when you do this, you may feel the sensations at your feet. Maybe the texture and temperature of the floor that you're walking. And maybe which parts of your feet is touching the ground. Maybe it's the heel that's touching. Maybe it's the toes that are touching. That way, you can be mindful of your walking body. Notice the walking sensations. Try to take many mindful steps. And when you try to do this, it's natural that you get lost in your thoughts. Various thoughts, memories, future planning, they grab your attention. Surrounding sights, sounds, you start storytelling based on them. So this way our attention is grabbed by various thoughts and other processes. But it's okay. After a while, you realize that you have gotten lost and you can gently return your attention back to the walking sensations. Notice the mindful steps once more and try to be with the walking process. Try to take few mindful steps. Once again, your attention will go with thoughts. You'll get lost. But again and again, we try to return back to the walking process and try to notice the walking sensations. So this way we will join as a group for a mindful walking session. And when you hear the bell sound, you can return back to the seats. Okay, everyone. Now you can return back to your seats. That's our time to do mindful walking today. This is just to give you an idea so you can practice on your own. And the walking experiences, you can direct your experiences into the Q&A session and discuss further. Sarindu, with that, you can take good.
Thank you very much, Bhante, for guiding us and letting us do the mindful walking session. With that, we once again hand over back to Venerable Bhante for the talk of the day, Swaminathan. So I want to welcome Venerable Damakusala Thero once again to explain us the topic for the day.
Thanks. Hello, everyone. So this is a continuation from last week. If you joined the last week's program, you might remember we discussed on this topic. And today I thought of directing your attention towards another part of the same topic. So this one is a continuation. I will not repeat the last week's comments, and instead I will direct your attention towards some other aspect of the same topic. Now, last time we talked about the quote that is in the poster, that you must behave in life as you're at a dinner party, and how to, you know, find that proper balance, and how to, you know, control your cravings, desires, and go with the flow of life. That was the topic that we discussed last time. Now, this time, we can discuss further on the same topic and relate it to our mindfulness practice more and more. Now, let's say when you get various cravings, when you get various desires, our natural reaction is to get rid of them. We say that we have to avoid these cravings. We say we have to avoid these desires. That is how we respond. If you ask from somebody, if you tell somebody, they'll say, don't go. Don't give in to your cravings. Get rid of your cravings. Get rid of your desires. That way, they will advise you. Let's say certain addictions. If you want to avoid the addiction, the world will tell you that you have to avoid these cravings. You have to get rid of these cravings. That way, the usual advice is given. But you have to ask the important question, does it work? Does it work at all? Now think about something that you crave, some desire in your mind. Let's say a delicious food, right? Just for a moment, imagine that food in your mind. Maybe delicious meal, maybe ice cream, something like that, right? When you think about it for a moment, and next moment, can you get rid of it? If I ask you to get rid of those thoughts, if I ask you to stop thinking about that, will it work? That's not how it works. Instead, those thoughts keep coming to your mind. You get into a struggle trying to get rid of these thoughts. How to get rid of these thoughts, how to avoid these cravings. That way you get into a struggle usually, right? But when it comes to the mindfulness practice, we recommend you some other method. We are not asking you to, you know, get rid of these desires. We are not asking you to avoid these cravings. Instead, what we are saying is you can be mindful. Now, let's say today's mindful walking, all these thoughts, various desires, memories, future planning, they come into our mind. These thoughts appear in our mind. It is natural that they appear. But among all these things, we are conscious, we are mindful, and we return our attention to the walking sensations. Let's say the sensations at your feet. We try to maintain our attention there. After a short while, again, the same thoughts appear. But again, you become conscious and you return your attention to the walking sensations. That way, when we practice mindfulness, we are not avoiding these cravings. We are not avoiding these desires. We are not avoiding these thoughts. Instead, we become conscious of them. We are aware that these thoughts are there. We are aware that these desires are there. We are aware that these cravings are there. That is the important part that you have to do in this practice. Even in sitting meditation, you are supposed to stay with the breath, breathing sensations. That's where you should keep your attention. But naturally, various desires, various thoughts, various cravings, these things appear in your mind. They grab your attention. We are not recommending you to avoid them. We are not recommending you to suppress them. Instead, simply be aware that these thoughts are there. Simply be aware that these cravings, desires are there. With that awareness, we continue our mindfulness practice. We gently return our attention back to the breathing. Even in your day-to-day life, whenever these cravings, desires come, you simply be aware. That is the balancing act. That is the moderation that we practice in the mindfulness. We are not trying to get rid of them. We are not indulging in them. You have to find the middle path, the proper balance. If you try to get rid of, if you try to suppress them, then you are in this never-ending struggle. If you start indulging in them, you go into the same kind of a struggle, right? So those two extremes you have to avoid. And in the middle, we find our mindfulness practice. That is what we are doing. So this advice, you don't hear that often. You don't hear that it's okay to have these thoughts. It's okay to have these desires. It's okay to have these cravings. Right? If you want to really deal with these thoughts, if you want to really deal with these desires, if you want to really deal with these cravings, that is the proper way. You let them be under the light of your mindfulness. That is the very idea. And for you to let them be, it takes some effort. It is not easy. You prefer getting rid of them. You prefer not having thoughts. You prefer not having desires. That is your preference. It is much easier to, you know, it is much easier if you don't have these thoughts. It is much easier if you don't have these desires. Especially during your meditation time, you say, I don't need these thoughts. I don't need these desires. Without them, I'll be peaceful. That is the general idea that you get. But the proper practice will tell you that let these thoughts, let these desires be. Among these things, you are mindful. That is the very practice. So it takes some effort to let these things be. That is called willingness. You are willing to let them be. The desires are there. You have willingness to let them be. The thoughts are there. You have willingness to let them be. The cravings are there. You have willingness to let them be. It is very important in the practice that you have willingness. You are willing to let these thoughts, desires, cravings be in your mind. Among all these things, you continue your mindfulness practice. Even in your day-to-day life, you do the same type of practice. You are not trying to get rid of these things. Sometimes your mind is all over the place. Right? Simply be aware. Be conscious that this is the status of my mind. Sometimes you have various desires, cravings. Simply be aware that this is the status of my mind. Sometimes you are angry. Simply be aware that this is the status of my mind. That way, among all these things, you continue your mindfulness practice. Simply being aware of the situation. Right? In order for these cravings, desires to let them be, you should have willingness. Willingness is important in this practice of mindfulness. And that is the proper way to deal with these desires. That is the proper way to deal with these thoughts. That is the proper way to deal with these cravings. For example, certain thoughts could be really disturbing. We say intrusive thoughts. When you get intrusive thoughts, your natural reaction is to suppress them. Your natural reaction is to, you know, get rid of them. That is the natural reaction. The world will tell you that these thoughts are so bad that you shouldn't harbor them. You shouldn't have them in your mind. You should get rid of these thoughts. That way the world will tell you. But if you know the practice, if you have that willingness, you simply let them be. Right? Certain thoughts, intrusive thoughts, they could be to harm somebody else. Right? Those type of thoughts are there. Maybe to harm yourself. The suicidal kind of thoughts. Those kind of thought processes could be there. So people find these intrusive thoughts very disturbing. They want to get rid of them. The society will tell you that you shouldn't harbor these thoughts. You shouldn't harbor these emotions. That way the society will tell you. But getting rid of them, suppressing them, it never works. If you start getting rid of them, if you start suppressing them, then in the process, you are giving more and more power to the same intrusive thoughts, right? So you have to understand the process of dealing with them. You simply let them be and become mindful. Become mindful that I have these intrusive thoughts. I have these thoughts to harm somebody else. I have these thoughts to harm myself. You are not trying to give in to the thoughts. Instead, you simply shine the light of mindfulness to them. That is the very idea. And let's say you keep practicing for a while. You keep practicing this willingness for a while. Willingness to let these cravings, thoughts, desires be. Right? When you practice this willingness, after a while, maybe after a few days, few weeks, you understand that these thoughts, these cravings, these desires, they are not so bad. They are not so unbearable. Earlier you thought that they are so unbearable. But when you practice mindfulness, when you have this willingness, you realize they are not so unbearable. They are not so bad. Right? You simply learn the art of living along with them. You accept them as a part of your own mind, right? That very acceptance is important. And when you do that, you realize it's not so bad, it's not so unbearable. You can, among these thoughts, among these desires, among these cravings, you can continue. That is very important. That is very important, right? So that way you realize it's not so bad to deal with these thoughts. It's not so bad to let them be. It's not so unbearable. Instead, you simply let them be and continue your usual day, right? So that way we are trying to find a proper solution for these cravings. We are trying to find a proper solution for these desires. We are trying to find a proper solution for these intrusive kind of thoughts. That is the way, if you know the proper practice, gradually you develop this. And let's say when you do this, you start to realize or you start to observe cravings in your body. Let's take you have certain kind of addiction, maybe let's say smoking addiction, right? Every now and then you get a craving. You get a craving to smoke. Your mind will tell you that I am so stressed, I need a smoke. I have done these things for so many hours, I need a smoke. That way your mind will tell you. Usually what we do is we give in to these cravings. And when you give in to these cravings, you don't even notice that there is a craving in your body. You only think that it is in your mind. But when you properly let these cravings be without giving in to them, then only you realize how these cravings are manifesting in your body. It is a very good practice to observe these bodily manifestations of your cravings. Right? Little by little, you can develop that ability to observe these bodily manifestations of your cravings. In order to do that, you can't give in to the cravings. If you give in to the cravings, you won't notice this part. First, you have to have the willingness, and somehow you have to accept these cravings, thoughts, and live with them. When you live with them only, you start to realize, you start to notice that they manifest in your body as well. Not only a thought, but there is a bodily part, physical part as well, right? So it is a very good practice to observe these physical manifestations of your cravings, of your desires, of your thoughts. It's a very nice practice. Let's say, even in our day-to-day life, when we get angry, instead of, you know, directing our attention towards the outside source of anger, we can direct our attention towards inside and see the physical manifestation of anger in your body. Let's say when you feel lust, instead of directing your attention towards the outside object, simply notice the manifestations of lust in your body. When you do get other emotions, cravings, same process applies. Whenever something happens, instead of directing your attention outwards, simply notice the physical component of those cravings, of those desires, of those thoughts. It's a very nice practice. When you are tired, see what you feel in your body. When you are angry, see what you feel in your body. When you have certain desires, cravings, notice what you feel in your body. When you have those intrusive thoughts, notice what you feel in your body. So this way, little by little, we can notice the physical component of these desires, the physical manifestation of these cravings, thoughts, that you can notice in your body. It takes some time, but it's a very nice way of practicing. When you feel jealousy, instead of thinking thoughts, instead of directing your attention outwards, simply notice whether there is a physical manifestation in your body. Do you feel anything, any sensation in your body related to this? Right? So that way, little by little, you can do this. You can practice this. And this is the proper way to deal with your cravings, this is the proper way to deal with your desires. There was this research that done with the smoke addicts, right? And there were like two groups. The first group, first category, they were given the usual advice. What is the usual advice? Don't avoid your cravings. Avoid these thoughts. Avoid the places that you smoke. Avoid the incidents that trigger a smoking reaction, right? So that way, the traditional advice, basically avoidance. Avoid the places, avoid the people, avoid the situations, right? So first group was given the traditional advice, basically avoidance. Then the second group, they were given the willingness approach. What is the willingness approach? Basically, be willing to let these cravings, desires be, and simply observe. Simply observe. Notice the physical manifestations of these cravings, of these desires. And later, these two groups were evaluated. In the first group, there were some people with the support of that avoidance, they were able to avoid or get rid of their smoking addiction, right? But in the second group, the success was doubled, double the first group, right? If they had 10 people in the first group who were successful, in the second group, they had 20, right? So you can really see how to deal with your desires, how to deal with your craving. It's not the avoidance. Instead, you have to somehow develop that willingness and simply develop the habit of living with those desires. That is the very idea, right? When I say this, there's this very nice story about Milarepa, who was a Zen monk. And it is said that he was a bad man before becoming a monk. He was a murderer before becoming a monk, right? So later he realized his bad actions and somehow became a monk. After becoming a monk, after some time, there's this very nice story about Milarepa and his cave. One time, Milarepa, after Pindapata, let's say, after Pindapata, he got into his cave. Inside this cave, he can see many monsters. There are many monsters residing or dwelling in his cave, right? So this is an analogy of his mind. There are many monsters from his earlier life dwelling in his mind, right? But now Milarepa is a monk. So he thought that I shouldn't harbor these thoughts. I shouldn't harbor these monsters in the cave of my mind. So initially, as the first way to get rid of these monsters, what he did, he started preaching. He started preaching Dhamma. He preached Dhamma to these monsters. Right? He said that this is good, this is bad. We shouldn't be doing these bad acts. Something like that. He was preaching Dhamma. After preaching for many hours, till the monsters were there. They didn't go anywhere. They didn't vanish. Now, Milarepa got angry. I am a monk. I'm still having these monsters in the mind, in the cave of my mind. Now he got angry. Then he started blaming, you know, he started blasting at them, saying that they should get rid out of this cave. They should get out of this mind. And he blamed for many hours. But still, not much shouting worked. He shouted for many hours. They didn't disappear. They didn't vanish. And at the end of the day, he decided to, give up. I have preached Dhamma to them. I have shouted at them, but still it didn't work. So let them be. I'm tired. I'm giving up. At that moment, all the monsters, they disappeared. Why Milarepa accepted that they too are a part of his own mind. That acceptance was important. With that acceptance, he developed the ability to get rid of those desires, those cravings, those thoughts, right? So that is the very practice, that is the very idea. Simply allowing your life to continue with these desires. Simply allowing these cravings, intrusive thoughts to be under the light of mindfulness. If you give in to the cravings, then that is one extreme. If you try to suppress these cravings, that's the other extreme. Those two extremes are the same. Most people, they don't understand this. They think that indulgence is bad, but suppression, avoidance is good. That way they think. But actually they are same. They are two sides of the same coin. If you take one side, the other side will be there. Right? So that's why it is important for the practitioners to develop this ability to let them be under the light of mindfulness. And when they do that, they realize it's not so bad. It's not so unbearable. They can continue with these thoughts. They can continue with these desires, cravings, and simply practice, right? So that idea is important. That ability is important. And when you continue for a while, when you let these thoughts, desires be, and simply continue with your practice, then you realize they are not so powerful, right? Because you are not giving power to them. When you try to avoid them, when you try to suppress them, in the process, you are giving power. Right? But if you let them be and simply continue, if you let those intrusive thoughts be, if you let those cravings, desires be, after a few weeks, you realize they don't have so much power over me. They don't have so much control over me. Still, they are there. Still, those thoughts are there. Still, those desires are there. Still, those cravings are there. But they are not so prominent. They are not so strong. Sometime back, somebody was sharing their experience about this. I think it was the same program. In this program, they shared. It was about these desires. It was about these intrusive thoughts, right? So that person continued his practice with the thoughts. He allowed them to be under the light of mindfulness and simply continued for a few weeks. After that few weeks, few months, this person realized now these cravings, thoughts, intrusive thoughts, desires, they are not so prominent. Earlier, he felt those thoughts like a full animal, like a dog, right? All the parts are there. The dog is there. The intrusive thoughts are there. But now, the person is only noticing the tail. Only the tail is prominent, right? Not the full animal is prominent. Not the whole animal is prominent. But only the tail is prominent, right? So you can see the difference. Earlier, they were so prominent. They were so powerful. Still, they are there. But now, it's not so prominent. It's not so powerful. What has happened? You allowed them to be under the light of mindfulness. You had that willingness to let them be. That is important. That is how the wisdom will grow. Right? Now in this practice, wisdom is important. You can be peaceful in your mind by avoiding certain objects. Let's say you go to a monastery. You avoid disturbances of your mind. You go to a peaceful place like a forest. You avoid certain disturbances. With that avoidance, you feel peaceful for a while. Right? You feel peace. But that peace is temporary. Let's say you sit in meditation, you develop samadhi, concentration. When you develop samadhi, with the power of that samadhi, certain thoughts, certain objects is stopped, right? They are suppressed with the power of the samadhi, right? So you feel peaceful, you feel happy, you feel that these thoughts are not so influential anymore, right? So these thoughts, these objects, they are suppressed with the power of samadhi, or they are suppressed with the power of the environment. So that way we can get rid of certain thoughts, certain objects, and be peaceful. But that peace is temporary. That is the issue. When you return from the monastery, when you return home, again the same thoughts, same desires appear. When you leave the forest, again the same thoughts, same desires appear. When you get up from meditation, again the same thoughts, same desires appear. So you can be peaceful for a short period, but that peace is temporary. You can get rid of these things for a while, but that is temporary. But when you practice this willingness technique, when you practice this mindfulness technique, you develop wisdom. How can you develop wisdom? When you allow those thoughts to be under the light of mindfulness, that very process will develop the seed of wisdom. Let's say your mind gets lost in these thoughts, in those desires, your mind gets lost in them. But what the practitioner does, they realize that I am lost in these thoughts. I am lost in these desires. With that realization, again, the mindfulness is established and gently return back to the breathing. Gently return back to the walking sensations. So when you do this once, a small seed of wisdom is planted. Let's say you sit for 30 minutes. How many times do you have to do this? Again and again, certain desires, certain thoughts, certain cravings, they grab your attention. Without you even knowing, your mind gets lost in them. And every time it gets lost, you realize that it gets lost. Return gently back to the breathing. That very process is the seed of wisdom. Every time you do this, every time you realize that you have gotten lost, every time you reestablish your mind, you are planting a seed of wisdom. So you can see the wisdom will arise from this process only. That willingness process, that acceptance process is nice. And what will happen? Thoughts are still there. These desires are still there. These cravings are still there. But they become less and less prominent. They become less powerful. That is the effect of wisdom. That is the wisdom in action. When you develop wisdom in the practice of mindfulness, you realize that these thoughts are there, but they don't have so much control, so much power over me. they become less and less prominent in your mind. That is the very process. And when these intrusive thoughts, when these intrusive desires, cravings, when they become less powerful compared to that reduction, you feel peace in your mind. When these thoughts have less control over you compared to that reduction, you feel peace in your mind. Right? That peace is permanent. That is the change. The peace that arises with the wisdom, it is permanent. No matter whether you are at a monastery, whether you are at a forest, or whether you sit in meditation, it doesn't change. You go back home, it doesn't change. You get up from your meditation, it doesn't change. Because this is permanent. The peace that arises with the wisdom, that is permanent. Right? So that's the real goal in the mindfulness practice. When you practice, you have to share your experience. It is important that you share your experience and get some guidance, get some advice. With that advice, with that guidance, you go and practice again. Again, after a couple of weeks, you share your experience. This way, if you get proper advice and continue for a few months, then you realize the wisdom faculty is improving. And when that faculty improves, when it grows, you realize the peace arises. It is permanent. That peace is permanent. No matter whether you are at home or at a monastery, you'll be peaceful. No matter whether you sit in meditation or busy at work, you'll be peaceful. No matter whether you are in a secluded forest or whether you are in a city, you will be peaceful. That is the effect of wisdom. That is important in the practice, that you develop wisdom. Otherwise, most people, they think samadhi or concentration as the practice. And as long as they meditate, they are peaceful. They get up and their peace is no longer there. That's not the proper way. That's not the proper practice. So this way, if you continue for some time, if you get the proper advice, guidance, if you continue your mindfulness practice, soon after a few weeks, after a few months, you can realize this. You can feel the incremental levels of peace within. And that peace will tell you that the practice works. That peace will tell you it is the correct practice of Buddha's way, right? So that's the idea I want to give today. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you very much, Bhante, for that wonderful explanation. And with that, I'd like to move on to the Q&A session. I think Lushan is ready to conduct the Q&A session. So I'm going to hand over to Lushani.
Thank you, Tarangul. So I'll begin with sharing my screen. I believe just to give an overview of, as Bhante said, it's important to make this into I'm not sure that my screen is...
Yeah, I can see it for sure.
Trying to get the right screen. Apologies. Can you see?
Yes.
See my screen. Okay, perfect. So as Bhante said, it's important to just for the new, and if there are any newcomers or if there's anyone already practicing, just a reminder. It's important to do the mindful walking and mindful sitting practice. There are these two links if you want to watch any videos just to start the practice or to refresh your mind. It's all on YouTube. So these are the two links. It's important if you can sit even for a short time every morning or at night or whenever that's convenient for you, and then slowly up it to about 2 hours, so 1 hour each of both mindful walking and sitting practice. But whatever you do, start with even a little bit of time, and then start to increase it up to an hour of each practice. Then you can write those reflections in a reflection report and send it to us, either through a Google form or email it to us as well. Those are the two links which are there. And then we will read the reports, and then you can ask questions and get guidance from Bhante. So this is a very amazing opportunity to really get guidance and better your practice. So I hope you will make use of this opportunity. And with that, I will share my stop sharing my screen. We will go into the report for today, Bhante Avasarai. There is only one report today, so I will read that report now. Mindful walking, walked indoors. Usual details of walking noted, such as feet pressing against the floor and release of pressure in the foot that is moving. Body weight shifting and touch of chilly air against the face and hands. Noted thoughts arising and passing. Some of it turned to mental calculations and the moment that awareness rose, thinking would end. Boredom set in and walked continued at a slower pace. Both heels felt sensitive from walking and toes felt numb due to autumn weather. Nothing else to report from the walking session. Walked for 1 hour. Then mindful sitting. It was hard to notice in and out breath near nostrils due to the current cough and cold, but other signs of breathing noted, such as rise and fall of stomach and expanding and contracting of chest. Body felt heavy and pressure noted around the forehead area. Intermittent cough took the attention away from primary object, but awareness would return to signs of breathing afterwards. Thoughts came and went. Some proliferation noted. Rise and fall of stomach became subtle. Sat for 25 minutes. Mindfulness during the day. When there is bodily illness, the things that are usually taken for granted get highlighted in mind. For example, natural breath against labored breath, sensations of pressure in head and temples against being unaware of any such data when body is well, lethargy in body versus the natural flow of physical energy that is usually taken for granted. The expectation of wanting to recover soon comes and goes while the observing part of the mind seems unmoved about if or how this may happen. This kept happening at intervals for a couple of days, and now the acceptance of how things are noted more. Worldly tasks like work and household chores take in lower priority and resting periods increase. Noted how mental focus had been reduced while having a Dhamma discussion online with a friend. It has been a good opportunity to gain experience more about the mind in times of illness. Dear Bhante, look forward to your valuable feedback. Much merit to you, Teruhan Saranam. End of the report, Bhante.
Okay, thanks for sharing. That report had a lot of insightful details, observations. Now I have made some notes. I'll go through one by one. The first one is in your sitting, and the thoughts appear and you are aware. In your report, you say with that awareness, the thoughts, they cease. That could happen, right? That could happen when you become aware, those thoughts, they disappear, they cease, right? But that is not guaranteed. So it doesn't matter whether those thoughts are there, whether those thoughts cease, it doesn't matter. What matters is you become aware, right? That's the very awareness that we said earlier. And you allow these thoughts to be. You have willingness in your mind to let them be, right? So that is the proper practice. Let these thoughts be, let these cravings, desires be. Simply become aware. Sometimes when you become aware, those thoughts disappear, but it is not guaranteed. Okay? So it doesn't matter whether they disappear or not, it doesn't matter. What's important is you becoming aware. Then the meditation, sitting meditation while being sick, right? So that's a good experience. Sometimes people, they don't meditate when they are sick. They don't like to meditate. They think that meditation could be done when I'm better, right? But if you are a meditator, if you are a seasoned meditator, you know that when you sit in meditation, if your practice is good, you realize these difficulties in your body, these symptoms in your body, they disappear in your sitting meditation. When you meditate, you get a break from the sickness. That is the thing that you can observe. If you know the practice, if you have practiced for a while, then you know. When you see, when you are sick, you sit in meditation and you can get a break from the sickness. And probably you can't follow your natural process like observing the breath that you can follow with the sickness. But whatever that is becoming prominent, you can observe. Now in your report, that's the rise and fall of your stomach. It's okay. You know how to do. You know how to continue. Right? Maybe for some people, it is the difficulties in the body, the pains, aches in the body. They become prominent when they are sick. That's also fine. Simply continue with those pains, aches. And after a while, you realize when you sit for a while, your sickness disappears. And soon when you get up from meditation, again, the sickness appears, right? So when you are sick, it's a good way to do a sitting session. That's how you can get a break from the sickness, right? And when you do that, you can't follow your traditional trained way of practice. The breath is not there. You might have to go with the rise and fall. That is fine. The both are not there. You might have to go with your bodily aches, pains. That too is fine. What is important is continuing your mindfulness practice. Right? So that way when you sit, you realize you get a break from the sickness. You sit for 30 minutes, you have no sickness. Again, you get up, you get the sickness back again. Then, day to day, surviving, functioning with the sickness, right? You notice many things that you usually take for granted. For example, the very first one is the breathing. Breathing we take for granted. The comfort in our body, we take it for granted. But when you are sick, you realize that the breathing is difficult. When you are sick, you realize you no longer have the comfort in your body. And even the peace of mind, right? Usually we take it for granted. But when we are sick, we realize the real nature of our mind. It is all over the place. It is giving in to all those intrusive thoughts, especially when you are suffering with a fever, let's say. When you are suffering with a fever, you lose control of your mind. That feverish kind of a dreaming state you go into. And when you go into that, you realize all the intrusive thoughts, they get into your mind. And they start going in this never-ending kind of a loop, right? Again and again, same thoughts, same fears, same worries, they appear. And you are in this never-ending loop, right? So those experiences are good for a meditator. Why? Because this is the process of death that you are experiencing, right? You might not die from a fever. But at least you are getting a glimpse of the process of death, right? When we meditate, we are getting ready to die in a way. Because in deep meditation also, you are experiencing the same process, right? Only in deep meditation, you get to experience this. You get to experience that you are losing control of your mind. And all those thoughts, all those hidden memories, all those like imaginary kind of situations, they appear. They appear. And when they appear, are you getting fearful? Are you trying to run away from these experiences? That is the question that you have to ask. Right? In deep meditation, if you have experienced the real nature of your mind, if you know what happens when you lose control of your mind, that is a glimpse of death that you are experiencing. Even when you are sick, that same process is in action. When you are sick also, you are experiencing a glimpse of death. But most people, they don't like these experiences. For a meditator, it is the best opportunity for them to practice. But the regular people, they try to avoid this. They gulp down painkillers, they numb themselves, they sleep for many hours. That's what they do, right? But when you are sick, it is important that you go through this experience consciously. Otherwise, in your deathbed, you'll be again asking for painkillers. You'll say that I can't go through this, I need painkillers. That's why so many business is there for painkillers, right? People don't want to face their reality. They suppress it with painkillers. They numb themselves with those drugs. And they try to survive that period. That's how they do. But these illnesses, they are great opportunities for you to experience the dying process, the death. It's a glimpse of death. In your deep meditation, you are getting a glimpse of death. If you go through these experiences with the support of mindfulness, then in a way, you are preparing for your death. And when the death comes, you won't be so surprised, right? You won't be so fearful to go through that experience, right? So that's important. It's important to, you know, go through these illnesses without the support of drugs. Sometimes you may have to take them, but most of the time, these mild illnesses, you can allow the body to take care of it. When the body takes care of it, it takes some time. You have to go through some difficulty, but it's worth it. It'll help you to develop your practice. It'll help you to experience the death or a glimpse of death in the process, right? And towards the end of your report, you mentioned about the expectations to recover. That is there. Usually when we are sick, we only have one wish to get better, right? That's the only thought, the expectation to recover. That's why most people, they try to find some way to, you know, get to the other end of the illness. They try to gulp down painkillers and numb themselves for a few days and try to get to the other end. There's only one wish, the expectation to recover. But if you want to, if you know the practice of mindfulness, what you have to do is, you have to notice these expectations. And little by little, as you mentioned in your report, you accept the current condition. You accept that your body is sick. Sickness is natural to your body. Right? It is natural. So when you accept the current condition, that is the very source of getting better. Not hoping or expecting to get better, but accepting the illness. That is the very source of getting better. Right? So in your report, you mentioned that you give up the expectations and simply accept the current condition. And when you accept that current condition, you are no longer trying to get better. Your body has the full control to get better with the sickness, right? So that is the very process, accepting when we are sick. That's important because this body, it is natural to this body. When you are sick, we don't have to fight it. Instead, we accept that we are sick. And with that acceptance, the healing process, the recovering process appears. It becomes much faster when you have that acceptance. So great experience. Try to get these opportunities. And, you know, you don't have to search for them. Naturally, they will come. When you get such opportunities, try to, you know, go through them consciously. And it will help you to develop your practice.
Thank you, Bhante, for your valuable advice. So now we have some minutes to ask questions from Bhante. So I hope you make this an opportunity to ask all your questions. So if anyone is there who wants to ask a question, please raise your Zoom hand and we will unmute you so you can ask the question. Yes, Ashini, please go ahead. You can unmute yourself now, Ashini.
I want to forward the report about mindful tea break. First, I took the mug with tea into my hands. It was heavy. The mug was smooth, had a smooth surface. Mug was a bit hot. Then I started to sip. At the beginning, I felt the warm sweetness of the tea. I tasted the milky taste. It was somewhat salty as well. I had a desire to finish the tea quickly, but I identified that urge and slowed down consuming the tea. After finishing, I felt happy, felt that I didn't have sufficient amount of it. That's all the reports. So, enhancer, Theron, Sanyasani.
Okay, so that's very nice that you got to do tea meditation, right? So these opportunities, they are opportunities for you to practice. If you know the correct practice, you can practice throughout the day. We have so many such opportunities, like, you know, drinking a cup of tea, eating your meals, right? So that way, we have many opportunities. If you know the practice, if you have interest in the practice, then you have such opportunities. You have many opportunities. So instead of, you know, drinking the usual way, we take a tea break. We take, you know, a few minutes with our tea and somehow continue. And when you hold the cup, you can feel all those sensations, the warmth, all those things become prominent. Then probably the smell and taste, all those things are there. Then usually when we eat or when we drink, we gulp down our food. We have this urge to finish them quickly, right? That is the autopilot mode that goes on. That is the habitual behavior. But we take it slow and simply enjoy the process. It is all about enjoying your tea. It is all about enjoying your meal. Right? That is the very meditation. Nothing more. Right? So, even in Japan, they have this tea meditation kind of a concept. They don't take milk tea. Instead, they take the green tea. And, you know, green alone with the tea. No company. Instead, they sit with the tea for like 10-15 minutes and enjoy it. That's all. You don't have to, you know, have flavor in the tea. It could be just simply green tea, but still you can enjoy that process. You can enjoy that process. That way you have to approach meditation. That is the proper way. That is the proper meditation. Even while having a tea, you can meditate. Even while eating your lunch, you can meditate. If you know the proper practice. So it is important that we identify these opportunities, and it is important that we practice. Nobody will tell you that drinking a cup of tea, would it be meditation? Eating your lunch, would it be meditation? People won't tell you. People will tell you that it's not meditation. But if you know the proper practice, you can take all these opportunities. You can notice your desires. Even it is related to our topic for these 2 weeks. Last time we discussed about, you know, the food and the desires behind them. Those things we discussed last week. So you can get to observe your desires. You can feel the urge to finish this. You can feel the urge to have more at the end of the process, right? All those observations are important and valid, right? So that way, find many opportunities in your life to practice meditation. Drinking a cup of tea, drinking a glass of water, eating your meals, you can meditate. And if you know that practice, then it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter what you are doing. Still, you'll be meditating.
Thank you, Bhante, and thank you, Ashini, for sharing the report. If there's anyone else who would like to raise their Zoom hand and ask the question, this is your opportunity. Anyone else who would like to ask the question, please raise your Zoom hand. Yes, Panchani, go ahead.
Venerable Bhante, Avasarai, hello everybody. I too did some meditation on eating. At the weekends when I'm rested, I can focus on all of the steps of how the food is going into my mouth and the saliva mixing it and all of that. But I also observed being really busy during the week, coming home really starving and just gobbling it up with the awareness though. So with resting, you can do it, but the busy life that we've got, I've also observed the other end as well. Just wanted to share about it.
As long as you have awareness, it doesn't matter, right? So maybe you are starving, you are gulping down the food, but still you have awareness. During the weekends, you take your time, you notice all the processes, still you have awareness. Right, so both occasions we can take them as meditation opportunities. Whether you are in a rush, still if you have awareness, you are meditating. So most people, they think that they have to, you know, slow down. It's good, it's okay to take your time with it. But you can't do it all the time, no. Sometimes you have to do multitasking in your busy lives, right? So simply those occasions, simply allow those things to happen and notice that you are doing many things. You are doing many things. You can't always do one thing at a time. That's not possible, right? During your busy lives, sometimes it's not possible. So you have to understand multitasking is also possible, right? We have so much capacity. So we can do many things at once. But still have awareness, right? That's important. That very awareness is the practice. Most people think that they have to slow down. Even in our teachings, we say SMS, slowly, mindfully, silently. We have to do, right? So, but SMS instructions are given in the beginning only. When you measure in your practice, sometimes you have to drop the two S's. You have to drop the two S's and only save the M, mindfulness. Sometimes you are not silent, sometimes you are not slow, but still you are mindful, right? So SMS is only like basic instructions. Most people, they take the SMS, they save it for life. That is not possible, right? Sometimes you have to understand. You have to drop those two S's. That happens. And I experienced this funny thing, you know, when we go talk to an audience, let's say 100 people, we give them some instructions, we tell them the practice. They are newbies, they are new to the practice. So we give the walking instructions, and I tell them, okay, now we'll make a line and we'll go to the walking paths, and you just follow me. Right. So I go in the front and I go in my face. Right. And after a while, I have to look for them. I have to wait for them because they are coming slowly, mindfully, silently, with very small steps, they are coming. Right. So sometimes for minutes, I have to wait because they are still on the way. Right, but depending on the crowd, you have 100 people there, right? So imagine 100 people to come probably like 200 yards. How long will it take? We won't have time to meditate then. We won't have time to do the walking, proper walking, right? So sometimes you have to, you know, go with your usual pace, go with your usual rhythm and simply have awareness. Right. So the beginners, they don't understand it. They don't get it. They try to slow down everything. They try to take 40 minutes with your meals. That's not possible. No, that's not possible. Mindful cooking, we say, right? If you try to do one thing at a time, slowly, mindfully, silently, cooking won't be done. Right. It will take a couple of hours for you to finish the task. Right. It's not going to work. Right, so sometimes you have to rush. Sometimes you have to allow the body to take control and simply have awareness. As long as you have awareness, you are meditating. Right? So keep that in mind and continue with your practice.
Thank you, Bhante. May I please share something that's been really bothering me for some time with you, please?
Yeah.
Bhante, obviously, going to work, practicing silently, I've got used to all of that. Have no problem with it now, no friction. Really happy with the lifestyle I've got. But I have to make a big decision that involves me changing the place that I'm living, changing all my jobs, everything, to support a loved one that needs my support. So within this process, I'm getting the thoughts, thousand thoughts that I shouldn't, why I shouldn't do it, and thoughts that why I should do it. Deep within, I know this is the right thing to do. But I need some help trying to make this decision. I don't know.
Right. So in your mind, you know that this is the right thing to do. But in the process, you feel the friction. Right. So that is natural. The best example in my life would be to become a monk. That involved so many difficult decisions. But in your mind, you know that this is the right thing to do. But the process is not so easy, right? Leaving home, it is not easy. You know, this, I am supposed to do this, but it's not so easy. So it took me a couple of months. I am ready to leave at any moment, but I have no energy to leave. Right, so I keep postponing next week, the week after, right? That way, I kept postponing for like 3 months. And suddenly, I got my baggage and left, right? So that's how it is. That's how it is. You know that this is the right thing to do. But it involves some difficulty. The process is difficult. You know, giving up your work, giving up your home. Those things are difficult. Difficult. It involves so many emotions, thoughts. And, you know, it's like, you know, getting rid of certain parts of you, or other way, sacrificing certain parts of you. Right? So it involves some difficulty. But in your mind, if you know that this is the right thing to do, then do it. Then do it. Those friction that you feel, all those thoughts that you feel, they are natural. They are natural. So this is the same process of going forth. You know, you'll be going to a different job, but still you are experiencing that friction. You'll be going to a different home, but still that you are experiencing that friction. You are doing it for somebody else, that in your mind you know that you have to do it. but it's the process is difficult, right? So same goes for the mankud. You know that this is the correct thing that you are supposed to do. This is the correct thing you know in your mind, but the process takes years and it is extremely difficult. Right, same process. Right, so make sure in your mind you know that this is the right thing to do, and simply go through them. Don't rush them. Little by little, step by step, go. Right. If you need more time, give yourself more time. Right. It should be a gradual change. If you try to get rid of everything within a week or two, it's not possible. It's too much. Right? Too much pressure, too much difficulty, too much emotional troubles. Right. So take your time with it. Take your time with it. And little by little, step by step, you know, do it. And when you go through the process, you find strength that you never knew that you had. Right? So that is there. That is there. You think that I don't have strength to go through this. But in the process, you find the strength that is needed. The strength that you never knew that you had, right? So that's how it works. When you go through that process, even the universe or the nature will support you and, you know, give you more and more strength. That's the way of the practice. So take your time. In your head, you are clear. In your head, you know what to do. Take your time with it and, do it step by step. And when you do it for a while, you realize you can now even go to the next step. That way, you discover strength that you never knew you had. Good luck.
Thank you so much, Mante. That was so helpful. Much merit.
Thank you, Panchani, for all those questions. And that's very useful for everyone. So not merits to all of you who had questions, and thank you, Bhante, for all your valuable advice and guiding us through this path. A lot of merit to you, Sarai. I will hand it back to Tharindu. Over to you, Tharindu.
Thank you, Lushani, for conducting the Q&A session and reading out the reports. And thank you very much for all those who took part, asked their questions, shared their experiences with us today. So with that, we have come to an end of the session. So I kindly request permission from Venerable Dhamma Kusala Thero to end the session for the day.
Okay, Tharindu, thanks.
Right. So I would like to thank you. Once again, Venerable Homagama Dhamma Kusala Thero for continued guidance. And of course, the Chief Abbot of Nisarnavane, Venerable Udayiriyagama Dhamma Jeeva Thero, who initiated this program, and all those who supported us in numerous ways to organize this program today. And also, I cannot forget all those who joined us today via Zoom and Facebook Live. So, I would like to thank you all and wish you a mindful week ahead, and hoping to see you all next week as well.